Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Midnight Project 3, Retribution, by Joseph Nassis. Narrated by Marissa Clay, with a full cast.
The heat was oppressive, clinging to my skin like an unwelcome lover. 2 weeks in this rundown Rome apartment had frayed everyone's nerves to the breaking point. No air conditioning, windows that barely opened, and the constant paranoid vigilance of fugitives on the run. It was a recipe for disaster. I paced the cramped living room, sweat beating on my forehead despite the early hour. Ephraim slouched in a threadbare armchair, his usual composure worn thin. His fingers drummed an irritated rhythm on the armrest as he glared at Nikolai.
For the love of all that's holy, please stop humming.
What? It helps me think.
Well, think quieter.
I resisted the urge to snap at both of them. It had been 2 weeks since we'd escaped Claudia Black and her Midnight Project soldiers after recovering the second piece of the Gladius Diaboli. Roughly 2 months since the ill-fated attack on a Class 4 target at Lucky's just outside Bridewell, Oklahoma, that had started it all, turning our lives upside down and inside out. In just that short amount of time, we'd crossed the globe, invaded the fabled Bone Church in the Czech Republic, broken into the Vatican archives, robbed the Catholic Church of an irreplaceable journal, fought vampires, werewolves, and demonic entities, and wait, there's more. We'd finally gone to ground here in this shitty neighborhood on the outskirts of Rome, where we'd been keeping our heads down ever since. It was no wonder we were all on the edge of going nuts. Enough! We've waited long enough. It's time to move. The change in the room was palpable. Solomon's warriors, who'd been muttering amongst themselves in the tiny kitchen, fell silent. Ephraim straightened, suddenly alert. Even Nikolai's perpetual smirk faded into something more serious.
You're sure?
Ghost came through with our new IDs. We haven't seen any sign of the Midnight Project or the cops. If we're going to make a move, now's the time.
All right. About damn time. Where to?
Back to the States. We need to rendezvous with Ghost, figure out our next move in finding that last piece of the Gladius. Solomon, who'd been silent until now, spoke up from his corner.
And how do you propose we do that? We are not exactly inconspicuous.
That's where our new identities come in. Time to meet the new you, boys.
We're getting makeovers.
The next hour was a flurry of activity. I locked myself in the tiny bathroom, scissors in hand. My reflection stared back at me, a stranger with haunted eyes. I began to cut. Long strands of hair fell into the sink, a testament to the person I was leaving behind. The scissors snipped away, revealing a new shape, a new persona. When I was done, I barely recognized myself. Short, choppy layers framed my face, making me look younger, more carefree. If only. Then came the hair dye, a rich chestnut brown that would help me blend into crowds. As I worked the color through my newly shorn locks, I couldn't help but think of all the times I'd done this before. For roles, for fun, for escape. But never with such high stakes. The sting of colored contacts brought tears to my eyes as I blinked rapidly, adjusting to the unfamiliar sensation. Green eyes stared back at me now, a stark contrast to my natural blue. I studied my new reflection, memorizing every detail of this stranger I'd become. Jessica Shine is gone. Meet Olivia Reeves. When I emerged from the bathroom, I found the others midway through their own transformations. Ephraim and Nikolai were using their supernatural abilities to alter their appearances subtly. It was an unsettling sight. Bones shifting beneath skin, features rearranging like clay being molded by invisible hands. I focused instead on packing our meager belongings. Solomon and his warriors didn't need to change their appearances. They weren't the ones plastered on wanted posters across half of Europe. Still, they watched our transformations with a mix of fascination and unease. Everyone clear on the plan? Nods all around. We'd go to the airport in separate taxis, staggered departures to avoid drawing attention, meet up again past security, where our new identities would already have been put to the test. I climbed into the first taxi with Ephraim and Nikolai, my nerves jangling. The driver chattered away in rapid Italian, oblivious to the tension radiating from his passengers. Ephraim responded easily, his Italian flawless as he played the role of American tourists heading home. I stared out the window, hyper aware of every person we passed. Any of them could be Midnight Project. My fingers itched to touch the pieces of the Gladius, safely hidden in our luggage. The ancient weapon had brought us nothing but trouble, but it was our only hope of bringing down the project for good. The airport loomed ahead, a bustling hive of activity. My heart rate kicked up a notch as we pulled up to the departures terminal. First real test of our new identities. As we entered the airport, my paranoia went into overdrive. Every face became a potential threat. The businessman talking urgently into his phone. Was he reporting our position? The elderly couple arguing over their luggage. Were they really just tourists or highly trained operatives in disguise? Even the bored-looking janitor pushing his cart became suspect in my eyes. I needed to get a grip. I would lose my mind if I let this go much longer. But I couldn't shake the feeling. As we moved through the crowded terminal, I found myself cataloging potential escape routes, eyeing the security cameras, wondering if Ghost could hack into them if needed. My hand kept straying to the small of my back, where I'd normally keep a weapon. Its absence made me feel naked, exposed. Check-in was a nerve-wracking affair. I handed over my forged passport with what I hoped was a bored, jet-lagged expression. The clerk barely glanced at it, more interested in his computer screen. I held my breath as he typed, half expecting alarms to blare at any moment.
Enjoy your flight, Miss Reeves.
I nodded, not trusting myself to speak. Security was next, and I felt my palms grow sweaty as we inched through the line. I watched as Ephraim sailed through, his easy charm deflecting any potential scrutiny. Nikolai, despite his size, managed to look harmless and slightly bewildered. The perfect tourist act. When it was my turn, I plastered on a smile and handed over my boarding pass and passport. The security officer's gaze lingered on my face a fraction too long. My heart pounded in my ears. He knows. He has to know.
Is this your first time in Italy?
Yes, it was amazing. Hate to leave, but work calls, you know? He nodded, stamped my documents, and waved me through. The real test was still to come. As I approached the X-ray machine, I reached out with my magic, focusing on concealing the sword pieces from the machine's scanner. The familiar tingle of energy coursed through me as I directed my will towards my backpack, laying it on the belt as I did so. I joined the body scanner line, shuffling forward with the rest of the passengers. My gaze darted back and forth, scanning the faces of the security personnel. Were any of them agents of the Midnight Project, disguised and waiting to make their move on us? Or worse, legitimate law enforcement, ready to drag us in for questioning about the events at the Bone Church? Next to me, my backpack disappeared into the maw of the X-ray machine. Seconds ticked by, each one an eternity. I held my breath as I stepped into the scanner, waiting for alarms to sound, for armed guards to swarm in from all sides. After decades of waiting, the backpack emerged unscathed from the other side.
Next!
I started, realizing the attendant must have called for me more than once. I smiled in apology, stepped into the scanner, and put my arms up over my head. A quick swish as the machine did its thing, and then I stepped out the other side and grabbed my belongings from the X-ray belt. I nearly collapsed with relief. We regrouped at our gate, exchanging subtle nods of acknowledgement. I sank into one of the uncomfortable plastic chairs. I couldn't shake the feeling of unease that pricked at the back of my neck. I glanced around the waiting area, studying the faces of my fellow passengers. A young mother bounced a fussy baby on her knee, her eyes ringed with exhaustion. An elderly couple pored over a crossword puzzle, their heads bent together in concentration. A group of teenagers huddled around a phone, laughing at a shared joke. They all looked perfectly harmless. And yet I knew that any one of them, or all of them together, could be a threat. It felt like I couldn't let my guard down for even a minute. That's when Solomon ruined everything. He'd been eyeing the plane visible through the large windows, his face growing paler by the minute. Finally, he turned to me, jaw set in stubborn determination.
No, I will not board that metal death trap.
What?
You expect me to willingly enter a tube that can fall from the sky at any moment? I think not.
Solomon, we don't have a choice. Fine, you can have the aisle seat.
There are other ways to get there. Ways your modern mind apparently cannot comprehend.
Lower your voice. We can't afford to make a scene.
I will not be silenced. You cannot force me onto that flying coffin.
I took a deep breath, trying to keep my temper in check. Look, I get it. Flying can be scary, but it's statistically the safest way to travel. Millions of people do it every day without incident.
Statistics? I have lived for centuries. I have seen empires rise and fall. And I tell you, man was not meant to soar through the air like a bird.
Well, unless you've got a better idea, we don't have much choice.
As a matter of fact, I do.
Before I could stop him, he raised his hand in a dramatic gesture. The air shimmered and tore. Where there had been empty space moments before, a swirling vortex of energy now stood. It was massive, at least 10 feet tall, its edges crackling with arcane power that sent shivers down my spine. The surface swirled with otherworldly iridescence, impossible colors shifting and morphing in a mesmerizing dance that hurt my eyes to look at directly. Tendrils of mist curled around the edges as if the gate was breathing. Solomon? What the hell is that?
A trans-dimensional gate. A far superior method of travel to your flying metal coffins.
My mind reeled, trying to process this new layer of impossibility on top of everything else we'd experienced. I glanced around frantically, certain that such a spectacular phenomenon must be drawing attention. To my utter amazement, the bustling airport continued as normal. Travelers hurried past, their gazes sliding right over the cosmic anomaly in their midst.
They can't see it. The gate exists between realities. Only those attuned to such things can perceive it.
I had about a million questions, but there wasn't time. Our flight would be boarding soon, and we needed to make a decision. You're sure this is safe?
Of course it's safe. I've been using these gates for centuries.
Right, because that's a totally normal thing people say. I looked at the others. Ephraim seemed intrigued, while Nikolai was grinning like a kid on Christmas morning. Solomon's warriors looked utterly unsurprised. Clearly, this wasn't their first rodeo with magical portals. I weighed our options. On one hand, a normal flight with the risk of being recognized or intercepted. On the other, a leap into the unknown with a man who claimed to be centuries old. When did this become my life? All right, we'll do it your way, Solomon. But if this goes sideways, I'm kicking your ancient ass.
Fair enough. Now, shall we?
I nodded to the others, steeling myself for whatever lay beyond that shimmering surface. As I stepped forward, poised on the threshold of yet another impossible journey, I couldn't help but wonder what Ghost would say when we showed up via magical portal instead of a commercial flight. The gate's energy crackled around me, and I felt the pull of its otherworldly currents. I took one last look at the normal, oblivious world of the airport. Then, with a deep breath, I stepped through. The sensation was indescribable. It felt like being pulled in a thousand directions at once. My body stretched and compressed in ways that shouldn't have been possible. Colors swirled around me, sounds echoed from impossible distances, and for a heart-stopping moment, I wasn't sure if I even existed anymore. Then, as suddenly as it began, it was over. I stumbled forward. Where, I didn't know. The air was different, cleaner somehow. My vision swam, and I blinked rapidly, trying to make sense of my surroundings. We were in a field? Tall grass swayed around us, stretching as far as the eye could see. The sky above was a brilliant blue, dotted with puffy white clouds. In the distance, I could make out the silhouette of what looked like grain silos. What the?
Welcome to America.
The others were appearing now, stumbling through the gate with various degrees of grace.
That was awesome!
Ephraim looked like he might be sick. Where exactly are we?
Somewhere in the Midwest, I believe. The portal's exit can sometimes be a bit unpredictable.
I pulled out my phone and checked our location. We're in Kansas. Middle of nowhere, too, from the looks of it. I blinked, trying to process what I'd just said. We just traveled halfway across the world in the blink of an eye. No security checkpoints, no cramped airplane seats, no risk of being spotted by Midnight Project agents. It was almost too good to be true. How did... No, never mind. I don't want to know.
Wise choice. Now, how do we reach your friend? Ghost, isn't it?
Right. Ghost. Our genius hacker ally who was probably wondering why we hadn't shown up at whatever airport he was expecting us at. I grabbed my phone and dialed a number I knew by heart.
You're late.
Yeah, about that. We had a slight change in travel plans. You wouldn't happen to have a car that can pick us up from what appears to be the middle of nowhere, Kansas?
Do I even want to know?
Probably not. But I promise I'll explain everything once we're at the base.
Fine. Give me your coordinates.
I did. Then waited a moment for him to figure out our position.
All right. There's a small town about 10 miles up the road from where you are. I will have a car there by the time you reach it.
You want us to walk? I thought about what 10 miles in the heat and humidity was going to be like.
I'm not the one who decided to change the travel plans at the last minute. Best get going.
Fine. But I'm not thrilled about it.
You're young. You'll bounce back.
As I walked, I couldn't help but marvel at how quickly the impossible had become just another Tuesday for us. Interdimensional travel? Sure, why not? Ancient warriors and mystical weapons? Just another day at the office. Thankfully, we'd only been walking for about 15 minutes when the rumble of engines echoed in the distance. A convoy of battered old pickup trucks appeared over the rise, kicking up clouds of dust as they barreled down the road toward us. I tensed, my hand instinctively reaching for the pieces of the Gladius concealed in my purse. Ephraim and I stood by the side of the road, while Nikolai, Solomon, and the other men sat in the grass, trying to make our group look less threatening. The lead truck screeched to a halt a few feet away, the driver's side window rolling down to reveal a weathered face beneath a faded baseball cap.
¿Necesitan aventón?
Sí, vamos al próximo pueblo.
The man nodded, gesturing toward the back of the pickup trucks.
Súbanse atrás con los trabajadores.
Ephraim directed the others to climb into the back of the pickup trucks, where migrant farm workers from a nearby farm were already seated. We clambered in, settling among the tired but friendly faces. As the convoy lurched forward, I found myself envying the simple existence of the migrant workers. They weren't worried about crazed scientists or supernatural creatures that haunted the night. Their concerns were more immediate, more grounded in the everyday struggles of survival. The road stretched out before us, a ribbon of asphalt cutting through the vast expanse of farmland. Fields of corn and wheat rippled in the breeze, their golden stalks swaying in a hypnotic dance. The sky above was a brilliant blue, dotted with fluffy white clouds that drifted lazily across the horizon. For a moment, I could almost forget the danger that loomed over us, the weight of our mission bearing down on my shoulders. Out here, in America's heartland, the world seemed simpler, more peaceful. But the illusion was shattered as we approached the outskirts of the small town Ghost had mentioned, the truck slowing to a crawl as we navigated the narrow streets. I sat up straighter, my senses on high alert. The truck pulled to a stop outside a rundown gas station, the driver leaning out the window to wave us goodbye before pulling out back onto the road.
Well, this seems as good a place as any to wait for Ghost.
Solomon, how did you do that back there, with the portal?
Trade secret, my dear. Let's just say that I've learned a thing or two over the years.
For all his bravado and mysterious ways, I had to admit that having Solomon on our side was proving to be a definite advantage. Ephraim dropped onto the bench lining the wall of the station, and the rest of us followed suit. We settled in to wait, each lost in our own thoughts. My mind raced, trying to anticipate the challenges that lay ahead. Hopefully, we'd given Black and her Midnight Project operatives the slip for the time being, but I knew it wouldn't be long before they figured out what had happened and they'd be back on our heels again. I was certain of it. As the sun began to dip toward the horizon, casting long shadows across the dusty streets, two sleek black expeditions rolled through town and pulled up to the curb before the gas station we were waiting at. The rear window of the lead vehicle rolled down as I walked over, revealing Ghost's familiar face.
Welcome home. You know you have hay in your hair, right?
Don't ask.
I wouldn't dream of it. You ready to get out of here?
Am I ever. I waved to the others, and within moments, introductions had been made, and we were loaded equally into the two vehicles. We then pulled smoothly away from the curb. The SUVs carrying us bounced along the rutted dirt road that led through the rolling farmlands of the American Midwest. I caught occasional glimpses of rundown barns and decaying farmhouses through breaks in the thick rows of trees lining the roadside. And wheat. Seemingly endless acres of wheat growing on either side. A veritable sea of the stuff. Eventually, the convoy made a sharp turn onto a narrow road leading deep into one of those very wheat fields, The growth so close that the stalks scraped both sides of the vehicle as we drove along. After about another 30 yards or so, the pathway opened up considerably, changing from a narrow track to what appeared to be a genuine dirt road. We followed that for another mile as it meandered its way through the wheat, twisting and turning this way and that. Ahead of us, the wheat seemed to stretch on forever, but then, after an abrupt turn, we found ourselves at the edge of it. Ahead of us, the field extended another 50 or so feet until it came to an end against a crumbling barbed wire fence. The only other thing in sight was a rusty old jalopy, its tires half buried in the weeds and scrub brush growing up around it. But I knew better. That old jalopy hid the entrance to a former Minuteman missile silo that Ghost had renovated into a secret underground base. A base he'd been using ever since his escape from the Midnight Project's executioners. The drivers gathered to help Ghost out of the car and into his wheelchair. Once settled, Ghost hit a button, and what looked like a beat-up pickup rose smoothly in the air, apparently on hinges, triggering lights as it went, revealing an elevator leading down into the complex proper. As soon as we've all had a chance to freshen up, we need to talk. The game's changed. We've got two pieces of the sword now. Ghost twisted his head to look up at me, his eyes bright with excitement behind his glasses.
You found the second shard. Most impressive. We're gonna roast those midnight bastards on a spit.
His glee was contagious, and I felt an answering grin tug at my lips. With the near-mythical Gladius Diaboli almost complete, we finally had a real shot at taking down Assistant Director Black and her cronies. We stepped onto the metal platform that served as the base of the elevator. It slowly began its descent into a hidden world. But don't start popping champagne yet. Remember, the pieces we do have are absolutely useless without the still-missing third.
Oh, ye of little faith. While you three were out playing Indiana Jones, I had my people scouring the globe for any scrap of intel on that final shard, calling in every favor and greasing every palm. Something will shake loose. These things always do.
From your lips to the universe's ears.
Come now, what's with the doom and gloom? This is a time to celebrate. The band's back together. We're two-thirds of the way to the ultimate supernatural smackdown weapon. And you know I've always got a few tricks up my sleeve. It's all coming up, Team Renegade.
All right, put the pom-poms down. I'll save the existential angst for after my cleanup. But you better have some of that expensive bourbon you've been hoarding stashed away somewhere. I need a drink.
Just for you, my queen. Top shelf only. Go, do your thing. I want a full debrief in the war room in 20.
Flashing a mock salute, I veered off down the hall toward my quarters, Ephraim and Nikolai peeling away toward their own. Behind me, Ghost was showing Solomon and his men to rooms of their own. A tiny kernel of hope burned in my chest as I walked, warming me from within. Maybe Ghost was right. Maybe luck was finally on our side. Something told me I shouldn't get too comfortable with that feeling, but for now, I'd let it carry me forward. We'd earned a little hope, however fleeting. 20 minutes later, freshly showered and wearing a clean set of clothes for what felt like the first time in days, I strode into the war room to find Ghost, Ephraim, and Nikolai already waiting. The wall of monitors hummed with activity behind them, a rainbow of graphs and databases dancing across the screens.
You're late. I expect a full minute-by-minute recounting of your excellent adventures to make up for it.
He pushed a generously filled glass of bourbon across the table to me. Sir, yes, sir. I dropped into the chair across from him and took a grateful swallow of the rich amber liquid. It burned a fiery path down my throat. Okay, boys, story time. So let's start in Prague. I launched into the tale of our globe-trotting quest for the shard. From the haunting interior of the Bone Church in the Czech Republic to our encounter with the Cardinal inside the secret archives of the Vatican. Ghost listened intently, fingers steepled under his chin.
Hold up.
I had just gotten to the part about the giant snake hiding in the tunnels deep beneath the holy city.
How big was this thing again?
We were working too hard to keep it from crushing us to death in its coils to ask it to hold something still long enough to measure it. I'd say 50 feet, if an inch. I glanced at Ephraim and Nikolai. The big Russian simply shrugged, but my half-vampire friend nodded in agreement. The look in his eyes brought it all back to me in vivid technicolor, complete with the desperation I'd felt while battling the thing. I'd almost forgotten what true fear tasted like. Shoving the memory away, I reached into the inner pocket of my jacket and withdrew a bundle of heavy black fabric. Carefully, almost reverently, I peeled away the layers to reveal the two shards of the Gladius Diaboli. Even in the harsh fluorescent light of the war room, the ancient metal seemed to glimmer with an otherworldly sheen, the edges jagged like bolts of dark lightning. Unconsciously, everyone around the table leaned in closer, transfixed.
Shit. Look at those beauties.
His eyes gleamed with academic zeal. I could practically see that big brain of his whirring away behind them. So what now, Brainiac? You've got your new toys. Think you can science us up the last piece?
I'll give it my best shot, Jesse. We'll run every test known to man on these bad boys. Chemical analysis, radiometric dating, the works. I'm betting there's all kinds of funky juju woven into the metal that could give us a lead.
What about the lore? What do the histories say of the third chart?
It suddenly struck me how strange we must look, hovering over this ancient artifact. A fallen preacher, a Russian mobster-turned-shapeshifter, a dopesick porn star, and a paraplegic mad scientist. The punchline to a bad joke. But there was power here, too, in this odd little family we'd made. All of us broken. All of us remade into something more. I focused on dredging through my memories of endless hours spent hunched over moldy tomes. The third piece was lost to time. Last known location was somewhere in the Himalayas, but that was centuries ago. Trail's long gone cold.
Maybe not. We know Black had her fingers all up in ancient history's pie, yeah? Well, I'll bet you dollars to decoder rings she's grabbed more than just those two shards over the years. What if she already has shard number 3, locked up somewhere, like a supernatural prepper waiting for doomsday?
That would not be good. Not good at all. We need to find that third piece while carefully protecting the ones we control. We can't let her get the full blade.
The words fell like stones into the charged silence. I felt the weight of them settle around my shoulders, another burden to carry, as if we didn't have enough already. But Ephraim was right. The alternative was unthinkable. Okay, new mission. We find the shard before Black does. Ghost, you work on unraveling any secrets our two pieces might be hiding. The rest of you, we're gonna chase down every scrap of intel on Black's movements and known associates. Tap every source. Bribe, threaten, seduce, I don't care. We need a lead and we need it yesterday. Ephraim cracked his knuckles, a grim smile playing at his mouth.
Let's get going.
Oh, we're gonna find it. You know I can't resist a good puzzle. And in the meantime...
He snatched up the glass of bourbon and raised it high.
We celebrate one hell of a win. You crazy kids really came through out there.
To Team Renegade, the most dysfunctional family of misfits this side of the supernatural divide.
And the other side.
In that moment, surrounded by these incredible, infuriating, impossible people, I allowed myself the dangerous luxury of hope. We'd pulled off the impossible before. Compared to that, what was one little shard? We weren't finished yet, not by a long shot, but for the first time since this all started, I felt something dangerously close to excitement for what came next. All right, you lugs, enough basking in our collective awesome. We've got a magic sword to find and a shadow government conspiracy to overthrow. Let's get to work. The answering grins from my friends were sharper than any blade. Yeah, we were far from finished. As I delved into the immense task ahead of us, Ghost wheeled off to his lab, the shards clutched reverently to his chest. I felt the tiniest sliver of unease watching him go. The sword radiated power like a dark star, malevolent and seductive. We were playing with forces far beyond our ken. A few hours later, with a mountain of arcane research and some leads to follow up on, I sat back in my chair, cracking my neck with a groan. It was time to go pester Ghost for an update. Not that I expected any groundbreaking discoveries this soon, but you never knew with him. That bastard had more eureka moments on the can than most scientists had in their whole careers. I pushed away from the table, rolling my shoulders to ease the stiffness. Ephraim glanced up from his towering stack of books, quirking an eyebrow.
Going to check on our resident mad genius?
Yep. Want to tag along? Could be entertaining. Ghost gets real squirrely when he's elbow deep in a shiny new project.
Sounds more fun than translating proto-Germanic. Lead on.
Together we navigated the labyrinthine corridors of the base, the hum of activity a distant buzz in the background. Rounding the final corner, we nearly ran smack into Nikolai, who apparently had the same idea.
Great minds! Shall we see what our favorite egghead has cooked up?
Nikolai smiled, just a quick twitch of his lips, and gestured for me to precede him into the lab. Such a gentleman. The lab itself was organized chaos, a mishmash of cutting-edge tech and equipment that looked like it had been liberated from a Victorian horror movie set. In the center of it all, hunched Ghost, utterly absorbed in whatever readouts were scrolling across the screen surrounding him. Ghost's head snapped up, his eyes almost feverishly bright behind his Coke bottle lenses.
Jesse, guys, come look at this. It's absolutely fascinating.
He beckoned us closer, fingers twitching with barely suppressed excitement. We crowded around Ghost, peering at the dense lines of data flashing across the monitors. I didn't understand half of it, but a few key words jumped out at me. Atomic makeup unknown. Energy signatures off the charts. Quantum entanglement detected.
You wanna translate this for me?
The metal in these shards. It's not from around here. And by here, I mean Earth. Maybe not even this dimension.
Come again?
Clark's third law. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. We're dealing with some seriously far-out material sciences here. Possibly extra-dimensional in origin.
I felt a headache coming on.
Okay, cool, but what does that mean for us?
It means that sword is more than just a really cool Kill Bill prop, Jessica. We're talking a level of power that's, well, unheard of, really.
It wasn't what I wanted to hear, but I wasn't surprised by his announcement either. We knew the blade was dangerous. It wouldn't have been broken up and hidden away if that wasn't the case.
The closest material I can match it to is a meteorite shard that the University of Arizona has in their collection. It's not an exact match, but close enough that I'm comfortable saying that's most likely where it came from. Most likely someone hundreds, maybe thousands of years ago, stumbled upon a piece of fallen rock and figured out how to rework it into this.
Can we use that to our advantage somehow? Maybe scan for that particular physical composition or something?
We could, if we had a scanner that let us look at the entire globe, but nothing even close to that exists right now. We can photograph every inch of the Earth every single day thanks to the latest advances in satellite technology, but photographs are a far cry from some kind of active scan for an object. You know, maybe you could act as that scanner. Use your magic to scour the globe for a physical match between the materials of the shards we do possess and the one we don't. Worth a try anyway, don't you think?
It did cross my mind that perhaps the man who had apparently safeguarded one of the pieces of the blade for centuries might know a little more about it than he'd let on to date. But nothing hurt in asking, right? I found Solomon in the armory, meticulously inspecting and cleaning his weapons. The rhythmic sound of the cloth against metal was almost soothing, a moment of calm before the storm we were about to head into. I watched him for a moment, marveling at the fluidity of his movements, the years of skill and discipline evident in every motion.
Hey, Solomon, can I talk to you for a moment?
Of course. What's on your mind?
It's about the Gladius, more specifically the third piece of the blade.
What about it?
We're so close now. We have two of the pieces, but that final one, it's still out there somewhere. And I keep thinking, if anyone might have a clue as to where it is, it would be you.
Me? Why would you think that I know where it had been hidden?
You were the guardian of the second piece for, well, longer than I can imagine. I thought maybe in all that time, you might have come across some information, some hint as to where the other pieces had been secreted away.
I'm sorry, Jessica, but my duty was always to protect the piece that was entrusted to me. I never sought out the others, never tried to uncover their locations.
Are you sure? Maybe some ancient text or a legend passed down through the generations or...
I swear to you, if I had any knowledge of where the third piece was, I would tell you. But I don't. My people, we always believed that the pieces were scattered for a reason. That they should never be brought together again unless the need was truly dire.
Well, I'd say the need is pretty damn dire now.
Agreed. But even so, the location of the final piece, it's not something I was ever privy to. I'm sorry.
I stared at him for a long moment, reaching out with my magic, trying to sense any hint of falsehood or deception. But there was none. Only a steady, unwavering aura of truth. Slowly, I nodded. I believe you. I don't know why, but I do.
Perhaps because I'm telling the truth?
Perhaps. Or maybe it's just my magic, telling me that you're not trying to deceive me.
I appreciate your trust, Jessica, and I wish I could be of more help, but this final leg of your journey, I feel you'll have to walk it without my guidance.
That's all right. We've made it this far, haven't we? We'll find that last piece one way or another.
I have no doubt of that, and when you do, the Guardians and I will be right there beside you, ready to face whatever comes.
I'm counting on it, Solomon. We all are.
Then let's finish our preparations. The sooner we leave, the sooner we can end this, once and for all.
Another day closer to ending this. But Solomon heard and understood. With a final squeeze of my shoulder, he turned back to his weapons, and I left him to his work. I'd struck out with Solomon. He had guarded the second piece of the blade for a long time, but that seemed to be the extent of his knowledge. At no time had he tried to recover either of the other two pieces of the mystical weapon. He'd been content to do the job he'd been assigned to do, and that was that. I wasn't, however. Content, that is. Ghost's idea was a good one. People had been using their powers, extrasensory or otherwise, to find things for centuries. Dowsing for water was a prime example. Perhaps I could do something similar, but instead of looking for water, I'd be looking for the missing piece of the blade. It took me a couple of hours, but I finally found what I needed in Ghost's vast library. I carefully removed it from its case and spread it out on the table in front of me. The parchment was ancient and yellowed, the edges frayed and worn. It was a map of the world. Or at least, the world as it had been known centuries ago, when the Gladius was first forged. Continents and oceans were rendered in painstaking detail, the workmanship exquisite, the accuracy uncanny for its time. But it wasn't the geographical features that held my attention. It was the task at hand, the weight of the Gladius hilt in my palm, the thrumming potential of the magic coursing through my veins. I centered myself, reaching for that place of calm and focus that I'd been taught to find. The presence of the others inside this hidden base, the hum of the air conditioning, my own doubts and fears, all of it fell away until there was only me, the map, and the piece of the sword. Slowly, carefully, I tied the fine silver chain I had brought with me around the hilt of the Gladius, the metal cool against my skin. I let the chain run through my fingers, extending my arm out over the map, the sword hanging like a pendulum, swaying gently in the air. I closed my eyes, reaching out with my other senses, with my magic. I could feel the power in the hilt, the echoes of the battles it had seen, the blood it had spilled. I could feel the resonance of the metal, the strange, unearthly alloy that defied identification. I focused on that resonance, on the unique signature of the Gladius. I pictured the other piece in my mind, the blade that we had recovered, that was even now safely stored away. I held the image of the two pieces side by side, imagining them reunited after centuries apart. And then, with a soft whisper of power, I sent my magic questing outwards, seeking, searching, straining to find that matching resonance, that echo of the Gladius's power. The hilt began to sway, the chain clinking softly as it moved. I felt a surge of excitement, of hope. The hilt moved over Europe, then swung back over South America. Over and over, the arc getting smaller, until something gave it another push and it changed direction, moving on an arc between North America and the southern tip of Africa. Back and forth, the swings speeding up and becoming wider, more erratic. I could feel the power building, the edge of the broken blade pointing down at the parchment surface, like a beacon in the night. But then, just as suddenly, the swaying slowed down, and then stopped. The hilt hung motionless, the chain utterly still. I frowned, pushing more power into the spell, focusing harder, straining with all my might to find that elusive connection. But there was nothing. No tug, no pull, no sense of direction or location. It was as if the third piece simply didn't exist. As if it had vanished from the face of the earth. I opened my eyes, blinking in the sudden light, feeling a profound sense of disappointment and frustration. After the difficulty we'd had finding the first two pieces, I shouldn't have been surprised. But I was. I'd hoped that having the other sections would make finding the third easier somehow. Fat chance. Ephraim and Nikolai stood in the doorway watching, their expressions a mix of hope and concern.
Anything?
I shook my head, letting the chain and hilt fall to the table with a soft clatter. No, nothing.
Could it be shielded somehow, hidden from your magic?
Absolutely. The Gladius pieces were scattered for a reason, after all. And those who did so clearly intended that they were never meant to be found.
We'll find it, Jess.
I looked up at him and saw the determination in his eyes, that unwavering faith of his. And despite my failure, despite the setback, I felt a flicker of hope reignite in my chest. You're right. We'll find it. After all, we found the other two pieces, didn't we?
That we did. If your magic won't lead us to the sword, then we'll just have to do it the old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned way. Digging through ancient tomes, deciphering cryptic clues, following the trails of long-dead heroes and villains. Right. It wouldn't be easy, that was for sure. But then again, nothing about this quest had been easy. I rolled up the map, tucking it carefully away in the leather tube in which I'd found it. The Gladius hilt went back into its protective case, alongside the other piece of the blade that we'd found in the church in Kutnahora. I put the silver chain I'd been using coiled neatly beside it. I picked up the case, turned to face my companions. All right, gentlemen, what are you standing around for? There's work to be done. The next several days were full of dead ends as the four of us got to work hunting for a clue to the location of the final piece of the Gladius. I was in our makeshift operations room, poring over ancient texts for what felt like the millionth time, when Ghost's wheelchair whirred into the room. The excitement on his face was palpable, a stark contrast to the fatigue that had settled over the rest of us.
I think I've got something.
Ephraim and Nikolai, who had been engaged in a hushed conversation in the corner, immediately perked up. Solomon, who had been meditating in his usual spot, opened one eye. His interest piqued. What have you found? Ghost wheeled over to the large monitor that dominated one wall of the room. With a few quick taps on the tablet in his lap, an image appeared on the screen. It was a photograph of what appeared to be an ancient stone carving.
This stone is a fresco currently on display at the National Museum of Belize.
We all gathered around the screen, studying the intricate carving. The stone was weathered, its edges softened by time, but the image it depicted was still clear enough to make out. It showed a long procession of figures, their features distinctly Mayan, hunched under heavy burdens, making a slow, arduous journey forward.
What exactly are we looking at here?
This fresco depicts a journey into Xibalba, the Mayan underworld, the place of fear.
A chill ran down my spine at his words, and I noticed Ephraim shift uncomfortably beside me. The air in the room seemed to grow heavier, charged with the weight of ancient beliefs and forgotten terrors. What does this have to do with the Gladius? I leaned in, studying the image more closely. The procession of Mayan figures seemed to be descending into some subterranean realm, expressions of fear and trepidation etched on their stone faces. Even rendered in cold, lifeless rock, their dread seemed palpable.
Take a look at this figure here.
He pointed to a shape that seemed slightly out of place among the Mayan figures. We all moved closer, squinting at the screen. The figure Ghost indicated was different from the others. While the Mayan figures were depicted in profile, with distinct noses and elaborate headdresses, this one stood out. Its attire was different, more reminiscent of...
Is that a Jesuit priest?
Exactly. And look at what he's carrying.
I peered at the image, trying to make out the details. In the priest's hands was an object, long and pointed. The image was too grainy to make out specifics, but there was something familiar about its shape.
You think it's the missing piece of the Gladius?
It does fit the pattern. The other two pieces were hidden away by Jesuit priests. Why not this one?
That's all very interesting, but here's one problem. Xibalba isn't a real place.
Ah, that's where you're wrong, my friend. The Mayan culture has always seen Xibalba as a real place with an actual physical location. For centuries, two locations have vied for being the entrance to the underworld. The first is a deep cenote just outside of Caban, Guatemala. The second is a set of caves deep within the jungles of Belize.
The room fell silent as we all processed this information. I could feel the energy in the room shift, a mix of excitement and apprehension filling the air. Caves and cenotes? Why is it always some creepy-ass place like that? Just once, I'd like the ancient artifact to be hidden in a nice, climate-controlled building with elevators and a coffee bar. Was that too much to ask?
So, you're saying our next move is to head to South America and go spelunking?
It's our best lead so far. The connection to the Jesuits, the pointed object, it's too much to be a coincidence.
So how do we know which one to investigate? Guatemala or Belize?
We don't, which is why we're going to have to check out both of them. Solomon, who had remained silent until now, spoke up.
The jungle will be the least of our worries if this truly is the entrance to Jabalba. The Mayans believed it to be a place of great danger and powerful magic.
Great. We definitely needed to add ancient Mayan curses to our list of problems.
We've faced worse. If this is where we need to go to get that final piece, then that's where we'll go.
I looked around at our ragtag group. We'd been through hell together, quite literally in some cases. The thought of plunging into an ancient Mayan underworld should have terrified me. But instead, I felt a strange sense of calm. This was what we did. This was who we were now. All right. Ghost, what else can you tell us about either location? Let's start with the caves in Belize.
The caves are believed to be located in this general area. It's part of a larger cave system known as Achtung Tunchil Muchnal, or ATM for short.
ATM? Like the ATM machine on every corner in the world.
ATM machine is redundant. The M stands for machine.
Fine. But the place where you withdraw the money?
The only thing you'll be withdrawing there is your sanity, if you're not prepared. The caves are treacherous. Parts of them are underwater, and they're filled with ancient Mayan artifacts and, other things.
Other things?
Human remains. The Mayans perform sacrifices there.
So if I'm getting all this down correctly, we're potentially walking into an ancient sacrificial site to retrieve a piece of a demonic weapon?
There's more.
There's always more.
The caves are protected. The Belizean government has strict regulations about who can enter and when. We can't just walk in there.
We've never let a little thing like government regulations stop us before.
And why start now?
I'll see what I can find out about the cave system itself. The more we know, the better prepared we'll be.
All right. What about the cenote in Guatemala?
That one's a little bit easier. Unlike the cave system, the cenote is open to the public and, in fact, is a frequent destination for tourists.
Okay. Nikolai, Ephraim, and I, plus a few of the guardians, will take the cave system in Belize. Solomon, you and several of the other guardians will investigate the cenote in Guatemala, if that works for you.
Of course. However I can be of service.
The final piece of the Gladius was within our reach. All we had to do was descend into the Mayan underworld to get it. Just another day in the life of a Midnight Project renegade. As everyone set to their tasks, I found myself drawn back to the image of the fresco on the screen. The line of figures marching into the unknown, the out-of-place priest with his mysterious pointed object, it all seemed to beckon to me, promising answers and dangers in equal measure. We're really doing this. Diving into the Mayan underworld on the off chance that a piece of our demon-crafted sword is hidden there. When did this become my life? I shook off the moment of existential crisis and focused on the task at hand. We had a lot of work to do if we were going to pull this off.